Welcome to the Fantastic Four, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And because he demanded it, my guest this month is the host of Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi, JSA in the 90s, Once Upon a Geek, and probably seven other shows I'm forgetting. It's the co-founder of this very network, the irredeemable Shag. Shag, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am wearing my lounge pants. I am so excited to be here. And, you know, like when you first joined the network, right, however long ago that was, I was so happy to have you on board. That was great. At that point, you know, you'd already been on my JLI show. And since then, you've appeared on my Marvel Star Wars show. And so when you brought this idea, this fun idea for a show to our network, I immediately asked if I could be on an episode. I figured, you know, you'd been on my show, kind of makes reciprocal sense. So I am so thrilled. And I'm quite frankly, I'm honored to be here on your, hang on, wait, let me check. 17th? Yes. Seriously? The 17th episode, Brett? Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, I've been trying to get you on the show forever, but you kept saying no. You know, you're such a diva with that respect. So
No. I said I wanted to do a mocktail. And you're like, oh, sure, you can do one of those in like 2 years. I've already had somebody on that. I guess you eventually had to get around to me at some point. I mean, I guess it was my turn because pretty much everyone else on the network's already appeared on the show. Speaking of those guests, for goodness sake, I provided the introductions for you to a bunch of your guests just so you could ask them to be on the show. And they all appeared before me. Yeah. I want to make sure you do realize that, and you said it in the introduction, I co-founded the network. And if you haven't noticed, I signed your paychecks, buddy.
Right. Well, I appreciate all of that. And now you're on the 17th episode. So here we are, you know, by the way, I've had a, you know, speaking of signing the paychecks, I've sent a lot of invoices for all the liquor I've been buying and I haven't gotten anything back. I just wanted to let you know about that.
Have you checked with the accounting department?
Maybe check. I figured you were the accounting
department. I am the accounting department. So maybe that makes a little more sense now.
Okay, great. And this is why you're on the 17th episode. All right. Well, listen, let's get on with this show, I guess. Sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character that they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to make and choose a comic book to discuss. Now, Shag, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen beverage and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
Sure thing. I have picked Tim Drake Robin. And I strap in. I got a lot to say. So you're going to have to interrupt me if you want to get a word here, buddy. So Tim Drake is one of my all-time favorite characters. In fact, he's in my top eight. I lay it out that much. He's in my top eight favorite characters. And I guess where it starts is like in the early 1980s, I missed out on the new Teen Titans. I came to that late. So I always thought Dick Grayson was fine. I didn't have that passion for him like everyone else did, right? So when I started reading Batman, which happened to me in early 1989, I can't imagine what got me interested in Batman in that year, but whatever. One of my gateway drugs was the collected edition of Death in the Family, which is where Jason Todd dies. Then I started collecting the issues for Batman Year 3 in Lonely Place of Dying, where Tim Drake was introduced. So it just seemed like my Batman collecting and reading just was programming me to be a massive Tim Drake fan. And you know what? I got a lot more to say. But let me ask you, are you a Tim Drake fan?
I am. I do like him. I come from him. I had Lonely Place of Dying. I had the series when it came out and everything. I was there when he came onto the scene originally, just when he discovered the identities and everything was introduced as Tim Drake. But most of my experience with him was actually through Young Justice, which is a comic I think I may have collected that the whole way through, or very close to the whole way through. So I kind of knew him. They portray him a little less mature in that series because he's kind of like he's the leader and he's kind of the straight man in some respects, but he's also having a lot of fun with Impulse and Superboy and as the team grows and stuff like that. So the art in that, he's kind of depicted a little, he looks a little younger too. So I kind of viewed him more as like this little kid almost, you know, almost like the age that they have like Damian now. I felt like he was more like that age, you know, as opposed to like around like 12 or something like that. You know, and I guess he's a little older than that normally. But I really enjoyed the character. I thought he was a lot of fun. And that was kind of the same thing. Yes, I knew. I actually did read the New Teen Titans, Perez Wolfman. So I was familiar with Dick Grayson being that character. I after the change, and he's been Nightwing so long, I always view, when I think Dick Grayson, I think Nightwing. I don't think,
Yeah.
you can probably hear my kids in the background. Sorry about that. But when I think Robin, I do think Tim Drake, and that's just from that point, from some of the Batman comics, but especially from Young Justice. So
And
yeah,
hey,
so go ahead.
can't go wrong with Peter David and Todd Knock on Young Justice.
No,
That's
absolutely not.
fantastic.
Yeah.
So for me, I like it, even after Tim became Robin, right? One of the cool things they did was Batman made Tim train in the cave for months. I think it was like a whole year, basically. Tim was always in training before he even got to put on the costume full time. And it was really the first time we got to see the evolution of a character as they became Robin, you know, rather than someone just putting on the suit in one issue and immediately being Batman's partner. So we got to see that evolution. Then another thing they put in there was that Robin was different because his father was still alive. So here we have someone in the Bat family who's not an orphan, right? And so that adds to the secret identity wrinkle, which is kind of fun. Then one of the things I like too is I loved watching Batman mentor Tim because he realized very early on that Tim had the potential to be as good or better of a detective than Batman was, which spoke volumes. And then there was, and I don't know where this comes from. I wish I could remember specifically, but one of the things they kind of slowly rolled out in the comics was somewhere in the background here that they basically said that someday Tim was going to give this whole thing up. Like the superhero game was for him right now, but he wasn't going to stay with it the rest of his life. He was destined for something greater outside of the superhero world. And that was kind of cool because all the other kids, you just assumed they were going to go on to become their mentor. Like he was never going to be Batman. That was great. And you can't talk about Tim without talking about the costume. Right. I mean, one of the things they did
Yeah.
was Tim, at least story-wise, that he didn't want to step into Dick Grayson or Jason Todd's exact costume. He wanted to make his own identity. So Batman made this awesome looking costume with the black cape, you know, with the yellow on the inside and the long pants. By the way, just remember, folks, for you people at home, no matter what Mark Waid's World's Finest comic tells you, Tim Drake was the first Robin with pants. They have retroactively stolen Tim's pants and given them to
Yes,
Dick
they have.
Grayson, and that's not fair. So you missed out on the Robin series, right?
Well, this particular series, I actually had the series, I guess, that led up to this. It was like a six, I think it was a six-part mini series where it was, I don't know how to, it was almost like Robin the college years or something, where he kind of went out into the world and trained with, I think, Lady Shiva and
Exactly right.
all
Yep.
these different people to kind of hone different aspects of his skills and his fighting skills and everything else. So I had that whole series, and I have some random issues of Robin. I have a handful. I knew, like, Tom Grummett, who draws this particular issue, I knew him more from Superman
Okay,
than I
sure.
did from Robin. And we'll talk about him more. But yeah, so I had the mini series. I had the occasional issue of Robin. You're 100% right about his costume. His costume, you know, blows any other Robin costume out of the water.
Yes.
It's a great look. But like I said, I kind of followed him more on his own, which was kind of interesting, because Batman was never really in the picture in Young Justice. So I kind of viewed him away from Batman. But the one thing that you brought up, I think, is interesting about him that kind of separates him from the other Robins is his greatest skill is he's a detective.
Yeah.
He's almost a detective first. And to the point where he will probably one day surpass Bruce Wayne as the world's greatest detective. Because that was, and I like that they focused in on that part of him. He's kind of the Sherlock Holmes of the Robins. You know,
Yeah.
he's the smartest one. He's one that can figure all those things out. So I thought that was a neat way to go to kind of diversify him from the other Robins.
Oh, absolutely. And then the difference is, like, he's not an acrobat. So he doesn't know squat about all. I mean, he can do some athletics, but nothing like what Dick could do. So really, they were two completely different characters, which was great because at first Jason was just a carbon copy anyway, of Dick. So I'm glad you mentioned that miniseries because it was kind of funny for me as a reader at the time because it's like DC had no faith in Robin. So they do that first, I think it was 5 or 6 issue miniseries, exactly like you talked about. And DC's thinking, like, this isn't going to sell, right? It's Robin. This is going to flop. And it was huge. So then instead of what the obvious thing would do would be go to an ongoing series, instead they're like, give him another mini series because we think that was a fluke. It's not, you know, in fact, we'll put the Joker in it and put stupid holograms on the cover. Yeah. Because it needs to boost the sales. The thing did insane. It was great, even without the stupid holograms. No. Then DC still didn't want to go for it. They did a third series with these, what I don't even, lenticular, like slider covers with the Huntress.
Oh, really? I didn't even know about that. I knew there was a second one. I didn't realize there was a third one. Okay.
There was a third one with Helena Bertinelli, and it was okay. But still, it's like, come on, DC, get the clue. This book sells. So finally, of course, they give it. Like you said, Tom Grummett on the art. You got Chuck Dixon writing it. Such a good book. I stuck with Tim Drake from all the way back from Lonely Place of Dying, every appearance I could find from, I guess, 1989, all the way through probably around 2008, 2009. So it's like, so we're looking at like 20 years I read this character nonstop, every comic I could get. And what kind of drove me away is when Damian comes on board. They didn't know what to do with Tim anymore. They didn't want to just throw him away, but they didn't want to do anything with him. And then he gets pushed into the background, eventually becomes Red Robin. I get why they did it, but I wasn't enjoying it, so I just kind of drifted away.
It's a shame. They did pretty much kind of push him out of the way after Damian got on the scene, and especially in the New 52, he became part of the Teen Titans again, correct?
That terrible Teen Titans series. Yeah, it was awful. Yes, it was terrible. Yeah. And I think he was Red Robin again, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So it was, they were just trying to find a place for him.
Well, I still don't think they really know what to do with him. I mean, because Damian, there's no way around it. Damian is Robin from now on. That's not going to change. And and having two guys running around named Robin is a little weird. Mm-hmm. I get that, you know.
Although I think in the new, is it, maybe I'm wrong, I thought in the new Batman and Robin series that's going on right now, I thought it was with Tim Drake. Am I wrong?
Oh, wow. I have not been following many current comics. I follow a few. Not a bunch. And that's not one. I'm over my Batman phase. So I have been reading this.
I just basically read the main Batman title. I don't really read a lot of the other ones, but I thought for certain it was him. I'll have to, somebody in the Fantastic Lounge will know the answer to that. So
that's true.
Maybe I'll have to issue a correction at the end if I'm wrong. But I thought they were kind of bringing him back as his partner for a little while. But
That'd be awesome.
I could be 100% wrong on that. I don't know.
The 90s are back in vogue, so it's quite possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, Robin, real name, Timothy Jackson Drake. First appearance, Batman issue 436 from August of 1989, created by Marv Wolfman and Pat Broderick. I had no idea Pat Broderick was the co-creator.
Well, what it was is it's like one panel in Batman Year 3 where this little kid is in his parents' arms, and he's there the night that Dick's parents are killed. So technically that's his first appearance.
I see.
But okay. I mean, it's ridiculous. Really should be the Lonely Place of Dying.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll get back to Robin soon. So in the meantime, Shag, why don't you tell us your beverage of choice?
Sure. I am not much of a drinker nowadays. In fact, I typically only have a couple of drinks a year, so you get to be one of those couple. Thinking back on my days when I was more consistently drinking, my drink of choice was Captain Morgan Spice Rum, but you've already covered that. So another choice beverage that I always enjoyed was Amaretto. And we used to drink a lot of Amaretto sours back in my college days. Really enjoyed those. So I threw Amaretto at you, and what happened?
Well, so I worked up a cocktail with Amaretto, and I may have even worked in some spiced rum for you too there, Shag. So that's the best.
I appreciate it.
Now, we're going to be pouring some Amaretto, but before we go over the recipe, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Amaretto in our segment I like to call Secret Porigens. See what I did there, Shag?
Did you just come up with that just now?
Just now.
That was clever on the spot.
Just off the top of my head, I just thought I'd throw it out there, see if people like it. So
you've never explained that joke 16 times before now?
Never. No, this is the first time. It's first time.
I'm honored.
Well, you should be. You're the first. All right. Thanks to thespruceeats.com and spiritsbeacon.com for this information. Amaretto is Italian for little bitter, which seems a little odd considering the liquor has a sweeter taste to it. However, in all likelihood, the drink probably wasn't as sweet as it is today. The origins of Amaretto, like a lot of liquors, is not clear. This is what we know to be most likely, and this is also where I start butchering the Italian language. So here we go. In 1525, a young widowed innkeeper modeled for the Renaissance painter Bernardino Luini, a student of Leonardo da Vinci. The widow fell in love with the painter and created a special liqueur from apricot kernels steeped in brandy as a token of her affection, creating the first amaretto. Her original recipe was somehow rediscovered by Giovanni Riena in the early 1600s. The Riena family eventually sold it as Amaretto di Serrano Original in the early 20th century, establishing the famous brand now known as Di Serrano Original. In 1786, the Lazzarino family of Serrano, Italy, invented the Lazzarino Amaretto di Serrano cookies for the king of the region. Then, in 1851, they created their own version of the Amaretto liqueur, which consisted of an infusion of their cookies with a little caramel for color. Now, Amaretto production differs for each distillery, but generally, you will find apricot pits used in other botanicals such as vanilla and dark sugar. This gives it its sweet and slightly nutty flavor. Amaretto is a very versatile liquor that pairs with nearly everything. It can be enjoyed over ice, added to coffee, mixed with cola, combined in fruity cocktails, and much, much more. Again, my apologies to anyone of Italian ancestry for that for that secret origin. I did my best.
You'll be getting a cease and desist from Dr.
Yeah,
Ange.
I will. When I recorded with Dr. Ange, we did
a Dr. Midnight comic, wasn't it?
Well, we did Dr. Midnight, but the liquor we were doing was Sambuca. So
oh,
I
right,
had
right,
sort
right.
of a similar secret origin, which I butchered even more, I think, than this one. So he's used to it. All right. So, Shag, it's happy hour. So let's make this drink. Now, I call this No Shoes, No Service. Oh, God. It's called No Shoes, No Service. And right now, Shag just put his foot right in the camera. Thank you so much. Well, I think that's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you next time. All right, Shag, while I recover from that, can you tell our friends what we need to make this drink?
Sure. Most importantly, in order to make a no shoes, no service, mm-hmm. you need to get a bartender who knows what they're doing. Because right. you don't want to trust me because I'm no good at this. But if I read this recipe you've so nicely provided,
yes.
The ingredients include 2 ounces of spiced rum. So my preference would be Captain Morgan. Mm-hmm. 1 ounce of amaretto. I did get Di Serrano, or is that how you say that? Or how you butcher it?
Di Serrano.
Okay, there we go. You get 1/2 ounce of triple sec or Cointreau. Is that how you say that?
Cointreau.
Yeah, that one too. Both of
it's
them.
It's a high-end triple sec.
Gotcha. 1/2 ounce of lime juice. I can pronounce that one.
Yep.
2 ounces of pineapple juice and a splash of grenadine. Now you add the ingredients, except for the grenadine, in a shaker. You add ice, shake it well, and strain it into a Collins glass filled with ice. Now, if you don't have a Collins glass, you can, in fact, use your Star Wars tumbler, as I have done, representing the Marvel Star Wars podcast.
Marketing.
You top it with a splash of grenadine, and you garnish it with a lime wheel. What you do not do is serve it in a hideous Philadelphia Eagles cocktail glass like some people might do.
How dare you. So anyway, thank you very much, Shag. Shag and I are going to enjoy our
No. Well, wait. What? Nope. Nope. What? I got stuff. I should have
oh,
told you.
Oh, okay. No, no,
I got. I want to talk here. So,
oh yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So this is a variant of a Mai Tai, right? Is that
yes.
what I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay.
This is a variation of a Mai Tai. Yes.
And I got a memory to share, which is relevant. So I wanted to do that
okay.
real quick. So
right,
I used to attend the Dragon Con convention for something mm-hmm. like 11 years straight. And we had this huge gang of friends that would meet up every year. We'd hang out and have a great time. And one of the big things we all did together was the night before the con started, that was the big party night, right? And we'd all hang out in Trader Vic's, the bar at the hotel.
Oh, okay.
And we'd dance to 80s music and we would drink Mai Tais. And we had many, many fun, geeky nights there with, in fact, with my fellow podcaster, Michael Bailey.
Oh,
and
okay.
He used to refer to the Mai Tais there at Trader Vic's as weapons grade Mai Tais, actually, is how we describe this. And all this ties back to the network because Michael Bailey and I became friends at Dragon Con. It's where we met.
Mm-hmm.
We used to drink the Mai Tais together at Dragon Con, or in this case, we'll call them a No Shoes, No Service.
Right.
Later, we did an episode of Michael Bailey's podcast where we discussed who's who. Then this guy named Rob Kelly, if you've ever heard of him,
Never
he heard me on that podcast with Bailey discussing who's who. And that's what led him to seek out my amazing podcasting abilities to help together found the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
How about that? Wow, that now that's a secret origin right there.
Oh my
gosh. So yes, this is a variation on Mai Tai, and I was going to discuss that when we came back from the break and talked about
Whoops.
The look and taste of it. But thanks for jumping the gun there. That's great. Have you
no
ever
problem.
Done this? You ever done this before?
What is this thing called podcasting?
So anyway, Shag and I are going to enjoy our no shoes, no service, as Shag explains to me that the Florida State Constitution was actually written on the back of a Hooters menu. So everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
He's not wrong, folks. A long time ago, in a comic book rack far, far away. During the years between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Marvel Comics kept the Star Wars magic alive, delivering bold new stories, expanding the mythology, and taking our favorite heroes and villains on unforgettable adventures. Now join me, the irredeemable Shag, and an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we journey back to this incredible era. We begin with a comic adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back and continue through the thrilling tales leading up to Return of the Jedi. If you're a seasoned Star Wars veteran who knows your share of brie from your hoojibs, or a brave explorer venturing into these comics for the first time, this is your hyperspace lane to classic Star Wars adventure. Join us for Marvel Star Wars, From Empire to Jedi, every other month on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And we are back. Now, the staff has requested that Shag keep his footwear on for at least the rest of this podcast. So, you know.
Those are mandals. Thank you very much.
Anyway, now that we've had a chance to taste our no shoes, no service, what do you think?
It's very tasty. I'm having flashbacks to Trader Vic's. I feel like I'm about to jump on stage with a band. It's really good. Do you want me to, like, I'm not very articulate when it comes to alcohol mixes, but I can tell you, like, it's sweet. It's tart. I can definitely taste the nuttiness in there. I can taste the lime, the orange. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Very, very fruit heavy. I feel like also maybe I'm like making hunch punch in the bathtub in college or something, maybe.
Yeah, we used to make it in these big drums. We used to line it with a couple trash bags and stir it with like a broken lacrosse stick. That's how we'd stir it up in college.
Broken lacrosse. Oh my gosh. Were you one of those prep schools that they made movies about in the 80s?
No, we were not. I was in a fraternity, but we weren't the evil fraternity. We weren't the ones with the pop collars. Anyway, yeah, it is fruity and sweet. You know, you get a little bite with the spiced rum that counteracts the you know, the amaretto is a very sweet kind of thicker liqueur. So that counteracts a little bit. It absolutely is based on a Mai Tai because I wanted to do something with amaretto, but I didn't want to do just a like an amaretto sour, which is basically two ingredients, you know, or an amaretto and Coke or something like that.
I'm just saying it would have saved me a lot of money at the grocery store. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought I told you, and I told the same thing, I think, when Rob, you know, for a lot of these liquors, if you want to make this at home, everybody, you can buy the little airline, but there you go. He got the airline bottles. Very good. You get the little airline.
It was the mixers. Size. The mixers were more expensive than the booze.
It's the pineapple juice. Yeah, the pineapple juice gets you because you just can't buy a little thing of pineapple juice, or at least maybe you can down there. I don't know. Maybe you can in Florida a little easier, but up here, like, you know, it's all Dole, you know, so it's all big pineapple and you got to get like either like six cans of it or you got to get a big canister of it. So anyway, so I'm going to be drinking a lot of pineapple juice in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, and what I did was to make this a little less expensive is I pared down. Normally a Mai Tai uses two and sometimes even three rums. Sometimes it'll use a light rum and a dark rum, or might use a spiced rum, or sometimes it uses a spiced rum and a dark rum, things like that. So I just pared it down to the spiced rum since we were adding the amaretto anyway, which isn't normally used in a Mai Tai. But you can, and it works well with the fruit juice and everything like that. So it's a real easy drink, and it will sneak up on you. So
yes.
Fair warning, if you're making these at home, draw them out a little bit. Have one. I'm looking at you, Captain Entropy. Make one, and then maybe wait a little while before you make the second one. So, but yeah, I was really happy with the way it turned out too. And again, if you're worried that it's going to be a little too booze heavy, you can always increase the amount of pineapple juice.
Because it's the only thing in the drink that's not alcoholic.
Yes, that and the splash of grenadine. Oh, and the lime juice, of course.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, pretty much so. All right, well, while we enjoy our no shoes, no service in a fantastic lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we'll be discussing that involves Robin is Robin, Volume 2, Issue 14, Publisher DC Comics, cover date February 1995, on sale date January 3rd, 1995, cover price $2.50. So I believe that is 10 shiny quarters, as you like to say. What were you going to say?
It is, but well, when we get to the cover, there's actually two prices. There's a $2.50 and a $1.50.
Okay, yes, we will get back to that. I think I know what you're talking about. Story title, Big City Bomber, writer Chuck Dixon, penciler Tom Grummet, inker Raymond Chrisling. Is that how you pronounce that? Chrisling?
We'll go with it.
Okay. Letterer, Albert Tobias de Guzman, colorist Adrian Roy, editor Denny O'Neill, and the cover art is by Grummet and Chrisling, and there are two covers, which I think is what you may be talking
about. That is correct.
So thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for the information. So Shag, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what the story is all about?
Absolutely. All right. So Robin is having one of those nights. You know, the kind where you're trapped in a burning chemical plant with the cagey beast who just happens to be wielding a nuclear device. And the only thing between Gotham and a mushroom cloud is a teenager with a staff and a slingshot. Flames are everywhere, the smoke's thick enough to chew, and Robin is juggling two impossible jobs at once. Keep the KGB at bay and keep a very nearly dead Harvey Bullock still breathing. So Bullock's new partner, Mackenzie Brock, charges in like he's auditioning for Die Hard 6. He blasts KGB square in the chest with a shotgun and buys just enough time for Robin to drag Bullock out of the immediate murder zone. Meanwhile, Batman's trading blows with Romana, another Russian operative, and the collateral damage from their tussle is destroying Lucius Fox's house. But it doesn't take long for the world's greatest detective to realize she's got no clue where the nuke actually is. Back in the Inferno, Robin realizes Bullock can't be moved due to his injuries, so he sends Bach to get help and start CPR right there on a burning floor. And let me tell you, I am not envious of doing CPR on Harvey Bullock. I'm just saying. Just when he gets Bullock stable, guess who stomps back into view? Yep, it's KG Beast. Time for round two. And Robin, he's just this kid with a staff, right? He throws down. He fights the beast one-on-one. He rips out the guy's cybernetic eye like he's pulling a cork out of a wine bottle. But the beast, he finally snaps. He grabs the baseball-sized nuclear device, hurls it straight up into the sky, and if the nuke hits the ground, Gotham's gonna go boom. Robin sprints after it, but he's not gonna make it. He knows it. We know it. Gotham knows it. And then, because timing is everything, Batman swoops in and snatches the device out of the air a split second before impact. Gotham lives to brood another day. Then, later, back in the Batcave, Batman actually gives Robin credit for holding his own against KG Beast. Bullock's still in rough shape, but the doctors think he's going to pull through. But before anyone gets too comfortable, out on Blackgate Island, the Clue Master is already cooking up his next scheme. And this time, he's got Robin squarely in his sights. Da-da-da!
Very good. Very good. So let's just dive right into it. Why don't we talk about the cover first? What did you think of the cover?
Well, which cover are we talking about? Because
Yes. All right. So why don't we just get into that? Yes, there were two covers for this. One I found a lot more interesting than the other.
Yes.
I'll describe one and you can talk about the other one. I'll do the good one. The main cover is Robin facing the reader, staff in hand. Now you see him from the waist up and his head is turned in profile and he sees KG Beast right behind him with his spiked fist and his gun hand ready to take Robin out. So KG Beast is basically a massive, he basically engulfs the entire background of the cover. So the cover is completely filled with KG Beast and then Robin in the foreground. You have the Robin title at the top and everything. But it is I think it's a wonderful, dynamic, sort of menacing cover. What did you think of that one?
Oh, it's absolutely the better of the two covers. It's phenomenal. And by the way, this is the $1.50 cover. This is the cheap one.
Yeah.
It's so much more interesting. KG Beast is huge. He's hulking. I never noticed, but the iconography on his mask, like the design on his mask, it almost looks like he's got two batarangs face to face on his mask. He looks terrifying. Robin, you know, over his shoulder, like, huh? You know, is realizing what's going on. And man, Ray Chrisling is an amazing, or Kissing, or whatever, however you say his name. He's an amazing.
I think it's Chrisling, yeah.
Okay. He's an amazing inker for Grummet. I mean, just, it looks so good, those two together. I mentioned that because the pairing we're going to see in a second doesn't look as good, but they look absolutely phenomenal together. It's also got the trade dress where it says Troika Part 4. which is important, which is then why we get into the second cover. So what's happening here, the Troika storyline, this is the first story where Bruce Wayne is back in the Batman suit since Nightfall. So we had Nightfall, we had Nightquest, then we had Prodigal, where Dick Grayson was in the costume. Mm-hmm. Now Batman came back at the end of Prodigal, and a Troika starts immediately after. So the Troika, well, it has nothing to do with Batman being back. You're using the covers to celebrate the return of Bruce Wayne, and they're showing off this new costume he's got. He's got this altered version of the bat suit. It's all black. It is no longer gray. The cowl and the cape, depending on who's doing the coloring, it either looks very dark gray or dark blue. Right. He doesn't have any briefs. He doesn't have any gloves. He doesn't have any boots. Now, by the end of this issue, he does get the gloves and the boots back. Yeah. Still no underwear, though.
So he's got the gloves. He's got the gloves on the cover.
Oh,
you know, that's the gloves and the boots on the cover. Yeah,
I didn't even think about that. You're right. Okay, so what we're looking at here is the Robin logo is there. Batman is the main image. He's standing on the corner of a building. There's a lot of, I guess, pointillism going on in the background there, and some hashing going on in the bat signal in the background. So Batman is the primary figure. His cape is huge, and then Robin's just kind of off to the side. And this is done by Tom Grummett, but inked by Terry Austin. And normally Terry Austin, you know, come on, is like the premier, but he's not as good of a fit as Ryan, Chrissing for Tom Grummett here. It doesn't look quite as good.
Yeah.
And the reason why this one was 250 was because this was embossed because, you know, the 90s. I'm not able to find out what was embossed, but I believe it was Batman's cape. Shape of Batman and the shape of his cape were literally popping out of the comic, I think is what it was.
I was going to say, I guess the embossment, it was sort of the feature for it because it's not a very dynamic cover and it's a Robin comic, but Batman is Robin's almost like plastered into the corner of it. You know, it's a Batman cover, which is which I want to talk when we get into the actual comic itself. I want to talk a little bit more about that. But the original cover. And you're right. And so anyway, that's weird because Mike's Amazing has it listed as $2.50 when you're right. At this time, comics were $1.50, weren't they? A regular comic book. Is that
so
correct?
The embossed cost you an extra dollar.
The embossed cost an extra dollar. Yeah. Yeah. You got to pay an extra dollar for a worse cover. Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't have the Troika trade dress on it. Mm-hmm. So pretty much, I think if I remember right, what they were doing was all the Batman comics that month featured two covers, you know, one very Batman centric. And then whatever the heck the other cover was going to be. So, it's to celebrate Batman coming back, but I'm not celebrating.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. He could have stayed away.
Yep.
Anyway, all right. Well, did you want to say anything else about either cover?
No, I'm good.
No, you're good? Okay.
I'll just echo. You're right. That first Robin cover with KG Beast, it's phenomenal. It is a phenomenal cover.
Yeah.
And Tom Grummett, we're going to talk more about him in a minute. Oh, my gosh, yes.
So we go into the interior. You've already given us a whole expert synopsis of this, but we'll kind of walk through it. It's not an overly complicated issue, you can kind of get into it. But you know, it starts with the splash page is Robin confronting KG Beast, and he has basically a baseball sized nuke that he's holding that they're referring to as Babe Ruth. Which was for those if Sean is listening, Babe Ruth was a baseball player.
Oh my God!
New York Yankees back in like the 30s. So anyway, you may
more than just a candy bar.
Yeah, more than just a candy bar. So anyway, so he's threatening to drop this. So were you familiar with the storyline at all? Now you were reading Robin, but had you read at the time? Had you read or since then? Had you read the other three parts of this?
I would have been reading it at the time, certainly. I did not go back and reread them this time. I wanted to read this sort of in a vacuum to see if it stood up. I think it still stands up. I mean, you're obviously dropped in the middle of a situation. You don't know how we got here, but all the pieces, other than when Batman's fighting the Russian woman, which they don't really explain, but you can kind of piece it together. Yeah. The issue stands on its own just fine. So I was fine with just reading this one. I don't honestly remember being all that impressed with the Troika story when I read it back then, though.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I basically parachuted right into this issue too. I hadn't read any of that. I'd never read the other parts of this. So this was brand new to me. You know, I could kind of figure out what happened to Bullock, not specifically, but I figured he got knocked out somehow or got hit in the head with something. Now this guy, so he's unconscious in the background. You have Robin in the front facing off against Cagey Beast, and then you have Harvey Bullock's new partner, Mackenzie Bock, who I was unfamiliar with at all. I didn't know anything about this guy, but he does
I
have,
have
yeah.
no memory of this guy whatsoever.
No, me neither. So he does have a nice moment where he just takes a shotgun and blasts. I keep wanting to call him Bane. He just reminds KG
Well,
Beast
okay.
just reminds me so much of Bane. Anyway, blast KG Beast dead center of the chest, knocks him down, and they're basically like, "Well, that's not going to hold him for long, so we better." So they grab Bullock and they're trying to get out of the way of out of the flames a little bit, and this is where you kind of really see. The one thing I really liked about this issue overall was I think this really illustrates the heroism of Tim Drake in a lot of ways, because he is doing everything he can to make sure Bullock lives. And Bullock is not a particularly good person. He has a he has his moments, but he's had a shady past. He's been a dirty cop in the past. He's done a lot of wrong. As you said, the fact that he has to give him CPR at one point, I can't imagine what that smelled like. Bourbon and bourbon
Tim's
and
gonna
beer
be
nuts and everything else. It gotta be off cigarettes. Oh God. It's like
Tim's gonna be
giving,
using mouthwash for a month.
I know, it's like giving CPR to an ashtray, basically. But
Yes.
he gets him out of the way and then basically sends this cop out. He says, "Go out and try to get help. Let it, find somebody because we have to get Bullock out of here." And he says, "I'll deal with him." And he's smart enough to realize the KG Beast is basically waiting for Batman to show up, because if he's going to drop this nuke, he wants to make sure he takes Batman with him. So it's basically the standoff between this Terminator-like villain, this super soldier, and a kid, more or less a kid with a, like you said, with a stick and a slingshot.
I mean, he's about 15 years old at this point. So just, I mean, we both have kids. We both have raised sons. And it's like, imagine when your kid was 15 and then them, knowing A, that they've got to keep somebody alive, continuing with the CPR. And, they're surrounded by all these burning flames and chemicals and all that. And they know they're going to have to go toe to toe with this monster of a guy that Tim knows he cannot beat him. He knows he is incapable of it. And yet he's not going to back down from it. And that, it's just the definition of a hero. It's great.
And so he sends the detective away to try to get help. And then we cut to where they don't really tell you where they are. It wasn't until the end that I kind of put together that Lucius Fox's house.
Exactly.
I have no idea why they're there, but he comes across this Russian agent straight out of the old school KGB look. This woman with a, she has a star tattoo on her, or she's bald, as a, this big tall woman. She kind of reminded me of, oh, who was Stallone's ex-wife? Bridget Nielsen. Remember the tall
I was
blonde
really
with
glad you
kind of,
came up with that. I couldn't remember her name.
So if you think Bridget Nielsen with a shaved head, that's basically what this woman is. And
Well,
so
she's wearing the ridiculous, like, Russian fur hat. And, like,
yes,
how
yes.
is she trying to? She's here in Gotham City. Is she? Wouldn't she want to try and blend in, and not look completely obvious as a Soviet agent, in 1989 during the Cold War? I mean, come on.
Don't know if she was using the Cold War hat to cover her star tattoo on her forehead, but maybe she could have gone with a different choice. Maybe just like a Gotham baseball hat or something like that might
Right,
have been the way to go.
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so he takes, she has some thugs with her, and Batman obviously makes short work of her and short work of them, and is confronting her on where this nuke is. So I guess they're aware of this nuke. Do you have any thoughts on her? Have you ever seen her before? Does she ever appear again? I'm completely unfamiliar with her as well.
Yeah, I didn't do the research on it in this case because she just seemed like such a distraction. I mean, she's barely in the issue. Batman has a couple of punches and then things like that, and then it's over. So I didn't even think much about her. But I guess if I'd reread the Troika story, I would have felt like she was a bigger deal, maybe. But this is the conclusion, and she barely even gets a mention. So, I mean, clearly she wasn't going to be that big a deal.
And then gratefully we get back to Robin on the next page, and this is where he's doing CPR on Bullock and doing everything to keep him alive. and the flames are growing higher and higher. We cut back to outside of the plant, where you see Commissioner Gordon, Renee Montoya, and a detective, Kitch. Were you familiar with Kitch at all?
I seem to remember him being a supporting character at the time. I think he was
Okay.
on the force and he was a royal pain in the butt. I mean,
Seems like it, yeah.
he really, I mean, I love his language. What a bonehead. You know, he's
Yeah.
John Wayne with a spare tire. He hot dogs at every chance he gets. And I'm like, come on. And the only thing that confused me here was they do refer to Montoya as Bullock's partner. And I'm
Yeah.
like, well, wait, I thought Bach was his new partner. Okay, maybe this is the transition guy for him or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
They're on a
maybe.
break.
Yeah, I guess they might be. Yeah, I'm not familiar with Kitch. I was trying to remember. Did you ever read the Gotham Central
You know, I
book?
didn't, but I know it was a great book. I just never read it.
Yeah, I highly recommend, if you can get it. It's probably on the app if you
It
can
is,
find
yeah.
it. Yeah, I would highly recommend it. I was trying to remember if he was in that. I don't think he was. Montoya was a big character in that.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of hers. Now, while I think she does a great job as the question, again, it's that trope of every supporting character has to have powers or become a
Yeah.
hero or a villain or
Yep.
something like that. And that was one of these cases where she was so great as a Gotham cop, as a point of view character, besides just, oh, you know, you always had Gordon, but he's the commissioner. He's not going to be out on the streets all the time. I mean, he's the most
Yep.
hands-on commissioner you're ever going to see. He's always like there, you know. The
Yeah.
commissioners aren't always there. But so Montoya was somebody who could really take that point, that place, and I really, really liked her as a Gotham cop. And so, you know, she does Question's a great character, her taking over for the original and everything, but I really, it was nice to see her as just a cop again
No, I
in
agree
some of these
completely.
things.
Like the story that was written made sense why she became the question. They did great things with her as the question. It doesn't change the fact that I wish she just stayed a cop.
Yeah,
Yeah,
agreed.
if that makes
Agreed.
sense.
Yep. And they see somebody coming out through the flames. That's obviously going to be Bach. But first, yet again, we got to go back to this Russian woman shooting at Batman while he's, you know, jumping around, ruining the paint job on Lucius's house. And then, you know, for one page, basically, he's dodging bullets for a page. And then we go back. And Robin has gotten Bullock's heart going again. He's breathing on his own a little bit, but he needs help. And that's when KGB catches up with him again, and then they start going at it. The Donnybrook begins, and you can tell Robin is. He even says, he goes, "I lose it for a second," because he's just had enough of this. He's stressed. He wants out of this. He's tired of this clown. He doesn't know where Batman is. You know, he's all on his own. So he just goes at him. What did you think of the way he reacted and the way he kind of came at KG Beast?
I think this was, I mean, the line here where he says, like, I'm getting sick of this beast. You
Yeah.
want to be at the ground zero in your own personal apocalypse, then you go ahead. He's basically telling him, blow up Gotham. I don't care anymore.
Right.
He's just that over it. The fact that he's able to at least kick KG Beast, and then, if nothing else, he's holding the machine gun hand away is phenomenal. Again, it's like we said, it's a 15-year-old kid. He doesn't have a single superpower, and yet he's not taking down KG Beast, but he's stalling him. And that's all
Right.
he has to do. He's stalling him with his skill and with his ability, which is great.
Then I guess when he blocks his gun hand with his staff, the KG Beast fires some holes into. Is that a That's a gasoline tanker, is it not? That's what I
I
was
believe so,
assuming
yeah.
it was. Yeah,
On a train
literally.
track, on an elevated train track.
Literally pouring gasoline on the fire is what happens next, and that's what we get to, the explosion in a couple of issues. We have to. We
Exactly.
Mackenzie Bach finally gets back to the police and tells him what's going on. Renee Montoya runs after him. We have to yet again see Batman fighting this woman for another page. I feel like they could have done this in like three panels and been done with her, but you know, they're taking up
Well,
like
I
four
think
pages.
this is the end of her though. Like, Batman knocks her off a banister and he says, "Give it up, Romana," which, by the way, just for you Doctor Who folks at home, it did drive me crazy that there's a female character here named Romana, because that's a Doctor Who companion. It drove me nuts. Anyway, and Batman's like, "Tell me where the nuclear device is," and we don't see her again. So if she's supposed to be a big deal in Troika, this is not an impressive way for her to go out.
By the way, the Lucius Fox house is enormous. If you see the way he is, he in the top panel of that page, of page 14, he is knocking Romana off that banister, And that house at least goes down two more floors. You can see it, but like just a huge wide spiral, sort of not spiraling staircase, but a staircase that kind of cuts around about three different angles. It's a massive house. So again, Gotham real estate's just something to behold.
Well, it's very lucrative to run Wayne Enterprises, I believe, is what it
Yeah,
is.
that's true. That's true. That's true. So we cut back to the main story. The gasoline had lit. It causes a huge explosion. Montoya is horrified. She thinks, you know, she wants to go find Bullock, and Kitch kind of holds her back and says, you know, forget, nobody can get through that right now. You're going to just have to hope that they made it, but they're probably gone. So let the firemen do their jobs and move on. And then I think you get to the point where it really shows. I mean, Robin has shown his heroism throughout this, but there is the next couple pages you see, or the next couple panels, you see Robin, whose cape is all of a sudden like seven times bigger than it was before, but he's kind of he's holding it over, kind of over his head, and like a little tent. And holding it with his fist to kind of cover Bullock from the flames, with no regard for himself. And then he
Right.
sees the KG Beast come behind
Well,
him.
before you move
Yes,
on,
go ahead.
I do have a piece of criticism on this one. Like
Yes.
he's saying, I can feel the fire through the 15-layer Namex. I don't even know what that is. But anyway, he goes, temps
Right.
have to be over 100, over 150. 150? Like, your shower is like 110, 120. Like 150 is not that hot, you know? So
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, like an oven, you tell me like 400? Yeah, that'd be bad. Okay, temps over a 400, I'm with you. 150? I'm like, you're not even going to burn your hand, man. Like, I'm
Yeah,
not sure about that.
I think somebody didn't do their research on that line.
Yeah.
I think you're correct. You're absolutely right. So KG Beast comes up from behind, and then I just think there's a great panel to begin page 16, where he is standing over Robin. It ties a little bit into the cover
Yeah.
image, but you have Robin. It's still got the cape kind of covering Bullock. You can't see Bullock, but you just see Robin from about the R on his shirt up, kind of holding the blanket. He's turned and he sees the KG Beast ready to strike, and he's trying to figure out, you know, he could burn to death, he could be shot, he could be blown up. And then you see the beast, like the beast is mad at this point. So all of a sudden he shoots out one of the blades in his machine gun hand, and he's ready to get personal about this. And then Robin has this moment where he realizes this could be it, and he's staring down at Bullock's gun. That's you know, his gun that's on his chest, and thinking, do I take this? Do I shoot him? And now, what did you think of that moment? What did you think of his? And we'll talk about what he ends up doing in just a second. But again, these couple pages just show the courage of this literal kid, and what he's up against. He's up against impossible odds. He's surrounded by flames. He's trying to protect a man that the chances of his survival are getting slimmer by the moment.
Right.
He's hanging on. He could do all this, and it could be for nothing. First of all, Bullock could die, or this dude could just drop the ball, and then everything blows up. And not only is Bullock dead and he's dead, but everybody's dead.
7 million people,
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah. And so he's thinking, should I take this gun and do away with him now? Now, I don't know if the gun actually would have done anything to KG Beast to begin with, but what did you think of him, that decision, that moment?
So I can't talk about the moment without the decision,
Sure,
which is where
let's
he
talk about
decides,
the decision.
well, he
Yeah, go ahead.
decides not to take the gun. He says, no,
Right.
you know, the rules count.
Right.
And the first thing I thought is, that is such a load of crap. All right. Because like the kid is gonna die, is what he's
Yeah.
thinking. And just because you pull a gun, you don't have to kill someone. He
Right.
could have pulled the gun, put six rounds into KGB's knees,
Right.
and you know, maybe this would have slowed him down enough he could have got away. So I do think it's ridiculous that in this case, Robin wouldn't pick up the gun and, like, again, shoot him in the leg or something
Right.
like that.
Right. Yeah, I went back and forth on this because it's sort of and I'll this reminded me of another story a lot, this whole story, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But you know, it was kind of this crisis of conscience. Now he doesn't have the aversion to guns from his past like Batman does,
Right.
but obviously Batman has taught him we don't use firearms.
Tim's all about the rules.
Yeah, and he's all about the rules. Now, you're right. He drops that ball and the rules don't matter. The KGB shoots him and the rules don't matter. He literally probably could have taken that and put, you said put six in his knee. He probably could have put six in his head and still not killed him. But,
Probably true.
possibly. I agree with you. I think he should have just, I think he should have used everything at his disposal at that moment to try to get through the next couple minutes.
The reason I specify the knee is because the rules are with Batman, you don't kill.
Right, right, right,
That's
right, right.
the biggest cardinal rule of Batman is you don't
Yeah.
kill. So at least that way, Tim's breaking the rule about using a gun, but he's not breaking the rule about killing.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. But he doesn't. He hits him instead. He hits his gun hand with his staff, and then KG Beast knocks the staff away, and then sort of kind of stabs and doesn't really stab, and kind of he juts
Why?
the sword like kind of up through his shirt.
I think he skewered him through the shoulder.
Do
I
you
think he
think he
got him.
did?
Yeah, I think there's some skin there.
Okay. All right. It kind of it's hard to tell because you can definitely see it goes through his shirt, but it goes like
Yeah.
up. So it was hard to tell, but he must have gotten something on him, at least cut him up a little bit because he screams.
Yeah.
And then, but then for as adverse as he was to using the gun, he then takes the R off his emblem, stabs the KG Beast. By the way, stabs him in the arm that's holding the nuke. I don't
Right,
know if
right.
he did that. And then rips his cybernetic eye out of his socket, which you can
Oh.
see. It's so subtle, but you can see like these wires and stuff that were like deep. And he even says it was connected to his brain. So he
Right.
pulled this out, and you can see like it's almost the spare amount of lines in this almost make it even more chilling that he did this because you just see a couple like wires and like a little couple splatters of you assume blood or something in this silhouette image of Robin tearing the eye out. And
Yeah,
I'm like, my God, just shoot him instead.
Grummet shows right the silhouette effect, which is really
Right.
effective with some spotlighting of like the
Yes.
Batman. I don't know what you call that. Threads? I don't know what you'd call
Oh,
those
the
yellows.
Robin, like, yeah, the little threads
Yeah,
in his the front of his
and you can see his eyes. Like
shirt.
that's it.
Yeah.
So really clever
Yeah.
choices there. As you said, the just making it silhouette, all the wires coming out of the eye are even more graphic, and it also probably got him past the comic code because it's not red,
Yes,
and
sure.
it. But it's super great. Now, he does say he thought it was just some kind of attached. He thought it was strapped on. He didn't know it was attached
Right,
to his brain.
yeah.
But oh, it's nasty. I mean, yeah. And how that KGB's didn't drop the nuke and all of that is a little nuts. But those two pages together, though. I mean, I criticize not using the gun. Forget that. Move on. The pages look great. On the page before, Grumman has used all widescreen panels. So it's almost cinematic. Because they're going left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And whacking with the staff and losing the staff and getting speared. It's all very, very cinematic. The action, it drives it really well. It's very clever storytelling. Really works well. And then the next page is four, almost like four trading cards, really kind of bang, bang, bang. And it looks really, and with a black square around it to make it pop. It's really, okay, let's talk about Grummet for just a second.
Sure, absolutely.
Dang. He is amazing. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this guy. For me, I always used to say he's like the 1990s John Byrne. Like, he could draw everyone and they looked great, but you could always tell it was Grummet. There was never any mistake. Like, that's a Grummet drawing. You always knew. And that's how much I like this guy.
I really like your comparison to John Byrne because that's who Grummet always reminded me of. He reminded me a lot of John Byrne. Now, his characters were always a little, Grummet's characters always had a little more heft to them than Byrne's.
Sure.
It wasn't like a 1-to-1, but his style and there were certain aspects of the facial features and things like that. Yes, absolutely. And like I said, I told you earlier, I knew him more from Superman, and he did a lot of Superman comics in the 90s too, and it just was terrific. It's wonderful. I don't know, is he still doing stuff?
Only some Kickstarter projects with Carl Kiesel, as far as I know. There's something called Section Zero that they worked on. I got that as a Kickstarter. Then Section Zero, 1959. I think I've been waiting for 3 years for it. So Grummet's still drawing, but not drawing quickly.
No,
So.
okay. All right, very good. Well, and that actually leads me back to something you were saying about that second cover for this issue is because Terry Austin inked it. And I thought that that was odd that they were not a good pairing because he reminded me so much of John Byrne. And obviously, Austin did so much great work with Byrne and the X-Men and everything else that why wouldn't this work here? But you're right. For some reason, it just didn't. It just wasn't a good pairing. But
That's a great observation. I hadn't thought about that. That's good. That's really good.
So you think they would have worked well together, but they didn't. And so anyway, after Robin rips his eye out, Beast is going crazy, and he's like, "All right, the hell with this," and takes the baseball size nuke. And I don't know why he just didn't throw it hard down on the ground, but instead throws it over his head, launches it over his head high in the air. And Robin is in the next page, watches it and goes tearing after it, running as hard as he can. He's trying to do that. I'm going to use another sports analogy. He's trying to do the Willie Mays catch. If anybody's familiar with that, this was an iconic catch. Willie Mays, who was an outfielder for the San Francisco Giants, he made this miraculous catch where he was running. The ball was hit dead center field, and he is running with his back to the ball. And right before he gets to the wall, he puts his glove out in front of him, so the ball is going over his head and lands right in his glove. So that's what this reminded me of. He was trying to do the Willie Mays. He was trying to catch up with him, and he's
Now,
running as hard as. Sorry, go
I
ahead.
may not be familiar with Willie Mays, but I do know Willie
Yes.
Mays Hayes,
Okay.
so which is phenomenal. Great, great baseball player.
Ran like Mays and hit like shit. So anyway, so he goes running after it. He realizes at one moment he's not going to get there. And who catches the ball? But Batman casually catches it with one hand. Use two hands. Use two hands, All-Star. Come on, just you want to bring it in. But anyway,
It's a freaking
Batman just casually catches it with his left hand, so casually that his cape is sort of draped over his arm a little bit, like he's been standing there for a
nuke, man.
while. You just see Batman's hand. Tim's exhausted, but happy that Batman caught it. And he's like, "All right, the ambulances are here. Let's get out of here." That kind of
So
leads me. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go
Well,
ahead.
Batman says that Ramona had no idea where the nuke was, so he had to, that left the Beast. How did he know where KG Beast was? Like, did everyone got? I mean, maybe the police were talking about it on the radio band. I don't know, but like Batman just knew
I
where to find
imagine,
it.
yeah. Yeah, I imagine that he was listening to the police. It had to have been. I mean, it's hard to hide something, an explosion that big in Gotham. So that'd be my guess. He knew where this was going. So,
And how do you feel about Batman being the one who saves the day versus Robin? Because Robin did all like,
right.
was it a cheat that Batman saves the day, or was it appropriate?
You can look at it two ways. You can hate it because you're like, well, this could have been Robin's moment. This was, Robin did all the work and everything. You can also look at it as he's not quite there yet, and he still needs Batman's help. I think obviously Batman was in this comic because they want to sell this comic. It would be my guess. The same reason Wolverine was in everything in the every Marvel comic in the 90s and everything. The same way Batman was in so many of these. It's funny because when I was looking for an issue of Robin for us to cover, I was reading through, I was skimming through a lot of these comics, and Batman was in so many of them and was so much more prevalent. I was like, I don't want to read about Batman. I want to read about Robin. So, they were still, they still, I feel like they still had the training wheels on Robin for a little bit, but this was one of the ones that I felt like he got to shine the most, even if he didn't get to catch it at the end. That's annoying to me, but I get it because I think it's sort of sending the message that, you're a good kid, but you're not Batman, not yet.
And I think it's appropriate that Batman probably caught, because I mean, the Troika storyline was supposed to be the return of Bruce Wayne. Like everything you just said about him training, and Robin, you did good enough. You did amazing things today. You didn't save everything, and that's why you've got a partner.
And if you want to continue the baseball analogy, you could look at Batman as he came in the ninth inning to close the game. He was the
Oh my
closer,
gosh.
so Robin pitched eight great innings, and then they brought in Batman to close, so you could look at it that way too.
Fair
But
enough, fair enough.
I did want to go back to one thing that what this story reminded me so much, and I was wondering why I liked it so much. And then it came to me, it reminded me a lot of one of my all-time favorite two-issue storylines, and that was when Spider, this was comic from the 1980s, an Amazing Spider-Man, where Spider-Man took on the Juggernaut.
Oh yeah, sure.
And everybody knows the story, but you had this young overmatched hero, standing strong against this powerful enemy that just keeps coming. He's finding a way to keep going. In the Spider-Man comic, Madame Web was going to die, and he was trying to save her life, just the way Robin's saving Bullock's life. He keeps thinking of other, just like Spider-Man did in that story. Robin's thinking of everybody else's safety besides his own. He's going the distance. It's like here's a Philly reference for you. It's kind of
Oh
like Rocky. You
no.
say he was like Rocky. He was going the
Okay.
distance. No matter what, he wasn't going to quit. It didn't matter what the Beast did. He wasn't going to quit. He wasn't going to let Bullock die. He wasn't going to let Gotham get blown up. He was whatever it was going to take. He had to rip his other eye out. It didn't
Oh,
matter. He was
jeez.
just going to keep going. And that it reminded me a lot of that Spider-Man story, which I always loved, and do love to this day. So it reminded me a lot of that. I thought it was just a great showcase for Tim. And it's not quite
Oh,
over yet, obviously, but
absolutely is a great showcase for Tim. You're right.
So we cut to Lucius's house, and I guess he just got back. I don't, maybe he was sent away when all this stuff was going on, or maybe his family was on vacation or something. I don't know. They come back and they see these painters are just finishing up in his house, and he sees Lucius is looking at the bill, which he didn't have to pay. Bruce Wayne paid it, but it mentions, broken banister, bullet holes, replacing furniture, all this different stuff. So he's trying to figure out what happened. And I guess his wife and kids are none the wiser. They just think he had the house repainted while they were gone.
And that's the cute aspect of it, right? Is he's seeing the stuff about bullet holes, and they're like, "Oh, you got the house done, so sweet." And the thing I don't remember is I'm assuming at some point Lucius Fox finds out Bruce Wayne is Batman. I don't know. I at this point I'm pretty sure he didn't know. So
Yeah, I don't think he knew at this point, but
yeah,
who
so
knows?
that's got to be pretty strange for him. What's going on here? And he knows Bruce has done this for some reason. Pay attention to what's going on around you, Lucius. Come on, come on. It's not that hard to figure out.
So anyway, then we cut to the Batcave, and Batman's in there fiddling with his costume, like you said, adding the gloves and everything. The word is that Bullock's apparently in a coma, but he should. He's probably going to be okay, or they should know by morning. I guess comas aren't what they used to be. I don't know. But and Batman, I guess, pays him the ultimate respect. It's not like he throws a party for Tim, but he says, "You saved his life, Robin," which I think for Batman is pretty high praise,
Oh, it
just the
really
way it
is.
was sort of phrased and everything. And yeah,
It's
go
sort
ahead.
of funny to me with the gloves and the boots and stuff like that. I mean, they really went a long way to change Batman's costume. And really, at the end of the day, all they really did was make the gray black and get rid of the underwear. I mean, really, that's all they've done. But they really made a big deal out of made a meal out of trying to make that
Yeah, they
look.
did. And it never looked right. They tried all these things, and it just never looked right. You gotta give them the underwear back, and eventually they
No.
do. You
No,
don't
you just
like the
go
underwear?
No, just go all black. Just go all black. Black boots, black gloves.
I don't know. I don't want it all black. What is that's no fun.
I don't
Really?
like the
You
black.
like really? Okay. Now this is, I did not expect this at all. You like
Well,
the
all right.
all black Batman costume, like how he looks in a lot of the movies. Is
Yeah, like
that what you
if we're
like?
talking po 90s on, that's what I want to see. I want to see all black. Yes,
Really?
with the yellow oval. Now if we're talking 1970s, yeah, I want to see Jim Aparo with the light gray and the light blue. I want that in the 70s, but in the late 80s to 90s on, yeah, I want all black. Black. I do want the boots and I do want the gloves, but they need to be black. No underwear, no thank you. Just have the
So
yellow
all
belt, the
black.
yellow oval.
Okay, but the yellow utility belt. You're okay with that? Now, you like it with the canisters, or do you want the pouches?
I'm good with either. I'm good with
Okay.
either.
All
Yeah.
right. I think if you're going to go all black, I think you should use the little capsule things,
You think so? Okay. All
not
right.
the
All right.
pouches. I think it would look weird with the pouches if everything else is like streamlined.
Okay. The Super
So,
Friends belt.
yes. So really, you like it? You just like it all? You almost like I'm in a ballet leotard with a cape
It's
and
Kevlar. Don't be
I
like that.
No, I Ballet dancers are strong as hell. I'm not saying
That is
anything against
true.
ballet dancers.
That is true.
I'm just saying, that really, you, I did not expect that from you. All right, you just like the all black costume.
I'm a
Interesting.
nine. As much as I grew up in the 80s, the 90s was my jam. I just, and I don't want to be known as the guy who, supports all 90s comics all the time. I mean, JSA in the 90s is going to wind down in the next year, and it's going to become JSA in the 2000s. So I'm not going to be living in the 90s for too long, but I did really love DC Comics in the 90s.
All right. Okay. By the way, thanks for having me on JSA in the 90s. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Episode 17.
So he's showing he's puts the new gloves on and everything, and I guess he adjusted his cowl. He's putting his cowl back on. He's just said telling Robin he's trying to stay one step ahead. Like you said, they just keep adding on to his costume now. They streamlined it, and now they're adding on. And then we cut to which is this supposed to be Blackgate?
Yeah, it's Blackgate.
Okay, Blackgate prison, where maybe you can explain this a little bit since you're a '90s guy. I know this is. This is Plue Master.
Yep.
Can you tell our friends in the lounge a little bit about Plue Master and what's going on here?
Sure. Clue Master's an interesting villain because he was a Batman villain originally. But then he was super, I mean, like there's A list, B list. He was like D list, like barely around, really didn't do much. Then I think they brought him back a couple times in the 70s or 80s. And then he got folded into the JLI as part of the Injustice League. So he became a punchline. He became a joke. So he was that way through about 92. Then Chuck Dixon decided to sort of reclaim Clue Master. And by doing so, the way he did it wasn't so much by using Clue Master, but by using Clue Master's daughter. He introduced Spoiler. So Stephanie Brown. So he introduces Stephanie as a supporting character in the Batman books, becomes a supporting character in the Robin books, and by doing so, starts bringing Clue Master back into it. So Clue Master becomes sort of a supporting villain for Robin. So what you've got here is you've got what's Rat Catcher, I think is what he's called. I think there's one in Marvel as well. So that was Vermin, I think. Anyway, it's got Rat Catcher in here in Blackgate. And he's getting kicked out of his cell because now Clue Master wants his cell. He needs a cell with a window for some reason.
By the way,
So
Rat
that.
Catcher, I think, was a movie star actually as well. He is, or more his daughter, but he was in the Suicide Squad, the second one with James Gunn.
Oh, you're right. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was Weasel from Firestorm. Those are some crazy movies, man.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. Just they were trying to make Fetch happen with Clue Master, and so they were trying to turn him around from being the goofy doofy one from JLI and Justice League, and sort of make him not like a big bad, but making him at least a threat that could threaten Robin, and because of the daughter. And quite frankly, I would not mind being a supervillain if some guy was dating my daughter and making his life a living hell. So yeah.
Sure. Well, and so, well, you read a lot of the series. Did it work? Did they do a lot of, did they make Clue Master happen, or was he, did it not work, or what do you think?
I don't think they did much with it. And, this is not a negative comment about the Robin comics, but I loved them and I read them and I enjoyed the heck out of them. They didn't stay with me. Like, I don't remember. I remember some of the bigger beats, but for the most part, it was like, that was a fun issue. I really enjoyed that. And I don't remember it. So not like junk food, because it's not that, because they're good, but they just didn't stay with me, unfortunately.
It was like top, it was like he was like a top 40 song.
There we go.
There
Yeah,
we
that's a
go.
better way to put it. That's a really good way to put it. It's fun. I enjoy it. You can dance to it. And then when it's over, it's over. And I mean, at the time, Chuck Dixon was writing Robin, Nightwing, and Birds of Prey, all three at the same time. And those were my favorite three comics. I wasn't even reading the rest of the Batman books after a while. I just stuck with those three. And I absolutely loved them. In fact, I told him that at a convention. I'm like, those were my three, favorite books that DC was putting out at the time.
I think unintentionally, this is the third Chuck Dixon comic I've covered actually on this show. I've covered a Nightwing issue and I've covered a Batgirl issue with Stella. I think the Batgirl Year One was by Chuck Dixon too, I think,
I think it
if
was.
I'm
I think it
remembering that
was.
correctly. Yeah, this is like the third one. Anyway, yeah. So that and that's it. And that's it. That's the end of the issue. Do you have any thoughts on the comic overall? I mean, we've already talked about it a lot. I don't know, do you have any other things to say about it?
No, I'm just going to echo what you said before. It was a great spotlight for Tim Drake and what he's willing to do up against insurmountable odds and the true sign of heroism and why he's the right guy to be Robin.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, Shaggy, it's last call. So in this segment, I ask my insightful guest, Shag, some thought-provoking questions that came
You
to
just
me.
called me insightful. I'd like to remind people at home about that.
Okay, you also interrupted me, so I guess I'll just start over. In this segment, I ask my insightful and sometimes rude guest, Shag, some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepare for this show. I ask the questions, and Shag hopefully fascinates us all with his answers. Now, as always, I have provided my guest the first two questions, the first two fantastic questions ahead of time, so you could think about them, hopefully. And then the third one is a mystery fantastic question. So, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, fantastic question number one. Take the Robins, Dick, Jason, Tim, Damien, Stephanie, and Carrie, if you want, and pair each one with a hero you think they'd work well with besides Batman.
Okay, so Dick Grayson. This one's easy, kind of cheating because he's already been partnered with this person, Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, right? Partner them together. They make a fantastic romantic dynamic duo. Tom Taylor just took it to the next level in the Nightwing series with them as a team. That's a no-brainer.
Right. Now, would he be a young Dick Grayson as Robin, or would he be Nightwing?
Oh, I didn't necessarily think about them as Robins. I thought about them as heroes. So that's a good point.
No, that's
So,
fine.
yep. So,
I use their first names, so they can be as at any point.
yep.
That's fine.
And
Okay.
the next one, Jason Todd, I also picked him as Red Hood as well.
Yeah.
So I had him partnering up with Deathstroke because they're both anti-heroes. They both love shooting people and they can swap machine gun clips like friendship bracelets.
That's
So
true. That's true. They could just
they'd be.
flip them back and forth while they're firing. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus Deathstroke 90s were his time too. He was
Exactly
really
right.
shined in the 90s. Yep. Okay.
Then Tim Drake. I'm just following Chuck Dixon's lead here. Tim Drake would be a great partner for Ted Kord, Blue Beetle. I don't know if you've
Oh.
read up on all this. If you haven't, you
No.
should. There was a period of time where Tim Drake was going to become the new Blue Beetle.
Really?
It was going to be temporary, but he was going to be the new Blue Beetle. And then there was going to be another series called Blue Beetles after that. Anyway, Tim, and that's the reason why they slowly started putting Blue Beetle into the Birds of Prey series and appearing and seeing with Tim Drake from time to time.
Oh, interesting. I remember him in Birds of Prey for a while. He had like a big crush on Barbara Gordon, didn't he? Wasn't he always? Yeah,
Well,
yeah, yeah.
but we
Well, who
all did, but
doesn't?
yes,
Yeah.
he did too.
Oh, interesting. So why were they going to do that? Was there any particular reason? Were they just trying to find something that Tim to do, or what were they thinking
Well,
with that?
it was to add some drama to everything going on. I wanted to put some wedge and drama between Batman and Tim Drake. So Tim was going to quit being Robin, Stephanie was going to become Robin,
Okay.
and Tim was going to go off and become Blue Beetle for a while.
Interesting.
That was going to be temporary, and then
Right.
these other kids were going to come over, and there was going to be multiple Blue Beetles called Blue Beetles. The whole proposal's out there on the web. You can read about it. And
Okay.
it was an interesting idea. Again, it was never supposed to be permanent, but it
Right,
was going
right,
to be
right.
something to go for a while.
Oh, that would have been interesting. Huh. Okay.
So in this case, I'm saying keep him as Robin, but partner him to Blue Beetle and Robin together. Then Damian Wayne, this again, I'm cheating. I'm partnering him with somebody he's already partnered with, John Kent, teenage Superboy.
Yeah.
That Super Sons book, I don't know if you read it. It
I
was one of the
did.
best books DC was publishing.
Yeah.
So stinking good. I've heard rumors. I don't follow a lot of the, like I said, a lot of the current DC comics. I've heard rumors are going to de-age John Kent again, back down to his young age. I hope they do, because I love seeing him and Damian together. They were such a great, contrast and best friends at the same time. It
Yeah.
was really a great partnership.
It worked so well when they were both of the same age and everything. It was terrific. And they can make it work is basically, if you're not familiar with the reason they aged up John Kent because he basically went on this quest and ended up, it was horrible. He basically ended up being a captor of Ultraman from Earth 3 and in this where time moves faster. So basically he was technically like in this horrible situation for years and apparently had no problems afterwards with it. No psychological damage was done, but it aged him like what it was supposed to age him like about 5 or 6 years, right? Or maybe even
Well,
more.
let's just say what it really was. He was aged because Brian Michael Bendis
They
wanted him
want
in
to
the
deal with
Legion,
him.
is
Yeah,
what it
okay.
really
Oh,
was.
okay, that's
And that
true.
didn't
Yeah.
work, out.
Yeah.
So instead,
Yeah.
they brought him back home as an adult.
That's true.
And
That was the first thing they put him in. I forgot about that. Yeah, they put him in the Legion first for that 12-issue series. Yeah. Oh, well.
So if they de-age John, I mean, I realize they've done a lot of cool things with John since then that a lot of people are going to be unhappy that they're undoing. But right now, you got two Supermen running around. You know,
They can't.
it works better when he's a teenager,
I
Superboy.
agree. I agree. I would really like to see that because they were a great contrast and they worked. It was the only time that it was really fun to follow Damian, to be honest with you. It was
Right?
with John Kent.
I hated Damian, and I started when during the Rebirth era, I was reading Teen Titans and Super Sons, and I was reading both of them with the intention of like hate reading them. I'm like, I'm gonna read these, but I'm gonna hate it because Damian's such a jerk. And I freaking loved both those books. And I'm like, and then I even started reading some of the Robin book they did a couple years ago with Damian, where he was, you know, on Lazarus Island or whatever it was.
That was really where they had like that fight contest and everything. That was very good.
Like,
That was, I
and
had that whole series. It was really good.
I didn't want to like it, but I kept liking it. All right, so Stephanie Brown. So Stephanie, as we mentioned, is the daughter of Clue Master, a villain, right? So how about we pair her with a reformed supervillain? At first, I thought about Trickster, but then I thought, you know, it'd be better actually is find someone who's sort of a street level, you know, in the Batman verse villain for her to partner with. So why not make her partners with Catman from the Secret Six?
Oh, that's a
So
good choice.
Catman and Robin would be kind of a cool, they'd be an interesting pairing because they're very different characters too.
Another underrated series, Secret Six by
Oh my
Gail Simone.
gosh,
It was a lot of fun.
so good. And then the last one, Carrie. So, all right, this is my most off the wall one. So, but she's a teenager from a dystopian future. So why not partner her with Commandy, the last boy on Earth, also from a dystopian future? I mean, they're completely different, but the contrast would be interesting. There'd be a lot of snark. I mean, she would be so snarky with him. It would be hilarious. And who knows, maybe there'd be a little bit of romantic chemistry with him if he discovers deodorant. But yeah, there could be something.
Yeah, he's always rocking those jean shorts, you know. That's that maybe that does it for her. You never
There you
know.
go.
All right, very interesting. Okay, there were some very interesting pairings there.
You're correct.
All right, fantastic question number two. You're starting a new Tim Drake Robin comic, and DC Editorial says you can use any villains from the DC universe. List Tim's new rogues gallery. You can list 5 to 10 villains.
All right. So
Now, listen, before you
first rule.
start, I wanted to tell you, I basically asked the same question of Stella when I had her on my show for Batgirl. You know, so Batgirl could have her own rogues gallery. So, you know, I have something to compare this to. So we'll see
All
whose list
right.
is better. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to point out that the only reason you got Stella on the show is because I did the introduction, and you guys also riffed on me quite a bit in that episode. I'm just saying. But okay. So first rule, Tim's got to be a teenager, right? I want him back to being 15, 16 years old, right? That's where I want, that's where Tim works best, I think. I'm also mostly going street level here, because I mean, just like we saw in this issue, he can only hold his own against so, you know, really powerful people. So first off, Scarecrow. I think I'm stealing from his mentor here. And the case where Tim was allowed to officially graduate and become Robin after a year of study was fighting Scarecrow. And that's when he even got his own suit. So I feel like it's fitting that Scarecrow would be one of Tim's rogues because that was like his first real villain. Then Anarchy. Anarchy was already a rogue of Tim, so I feel like he'd be a good one to bring back. It's kind of that detective angle. He's having to solve what's going on with Anarchy, really brings out the detective skills. That would be a good one.
You are so 90s. Okay,
I
go
really am. I really am. Then the Trickster. Well, okay, but it is the Robin comic was in the 90s.
It's
Okay,
okay. It's
anyway.
okay.
Then the Trickster, and you know, I don't mean the one I like, James Jesse, but the annoying teenager one, Axel
Oh,
Walker.
yes. Yeah. No, I'm talking
Because
about.
teenagers, right? So he'd be a viable threat right around Tim's power level, obnoxious teenager, steal from the Flash. That's a good one. Then I threw a couple more higher level ones in there. I think Dr. Destiny would be a good one to steal here from like the Justice League because now he's got a lot of power, but it's all in the dream realm. So it could be like a Freddy Krueger kind of thing. You know, Tim in the dream realm could be using the dream power to do what he needs to do to beat Dr. Destiny. So it gives Tim a chance to play in a different sandbox. I think that'd be pretty cool.
He could deal with some more sort of I don't want to say mystical type characters, but other you know, e even sort of like delve into the Vertigo universe a little bit that way too. You know, get have some weird kind of have some weird adventures with some weird side characters, some Sandman and stuff like that. Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
And that's kind of where I was going, is like give us something with more powers and with weirdness. But it's not like you know, someone with an amazing power level, and it's more all in the brain, because brain is something Tim can compete in. Then roulette. I love the whole organization of the house or the meta brawl, whatever you want to call it, from the JSA. So Tim getting involved with the meta brawl situation, all that would be really good. Roulette makes a great, like, if you ever play a role-playing game, roulette's like a super easy villain to plop in. She's just great. So she would work well. Sticking with the JSA, I'm going to steal one more. Sportsmaster, because he's
Oh,
just so
yes,
freaking
love
awesome,
sports.
right?
Yes.
I love this guy. You know, it's again, Tim's kind of, street level kind of guy. I like, maybe he's Tim's gym coach or something. I don't know, but I would love to see that guy in Tim's comics. And also, he's older, right? He'd be an older, kind of beefier kind of guy. That'd be fun.
Oh, I love. I'm a big fan of Sportsmaster. Yeah, that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Then I want to put a few more powered characters in. So I think Dr. Psycho, steal him from Wonder Woman.
All right.
Because again, mental powers, it's something that Tim could actually potentially, go up against. So that would be interesting. Then I'm really excited about this one. The General. I don't know. It's very 90s, but the General was General Wade Eyling from Captain Atom. He was that jerk. He trans. This is
Is
all
he
in a
the one who
Grant.
became? Sorry, go ahead and I'll
Yeah,
see if I.
you're there. You're
Yeah,
already
go
there.
ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
In the Grant Morrison JLA comic, he transfers his brain into the body of the Shaggy Man, and he
Yes.
shaves the Shaggy Man. So he's running around as basically the stubble-haired behemoth, but he's smart, and he's giant. He's a hulking brute, so it gives Tim against someone physical to fight. But also, this guy knows combat. He knows military tactics, so he could be a real threat for Tim. That would be good.
It would be, almost be like his well, I was gonna say it'd be almost like his Blockbuster in a way. He's not like a crime boss, but he's got a strategist sort of and like that. Plus, when he shaved like that, he must have been itching like crazy for like weeks.
I
When
just
he
love the
shaved
giant
the Shaggy
tusks.
Man. Yeah, I know. He had the big tusks. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, he's a great
And
character. Yeah.
it's funny, I actually wanted Blockbuster on the list, but I wanted the old school Blockbuster, just the strong brute one. I'm like, well, I can't do that. It's Nightwing and he's smart and all that. But so General was a perfect
That's
fit in.
perfect. That's basically what Red Hulk was.
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee you, whoever did Peter David come up with Red Hulk? I'm assuming, and he
I feel
wrote the
like it was
Hulk
Jeff
part.
Loeb, I
Or
think.
maybe it was Jeff Loeb. I guarantee you he was familiar. Well, of course he was familiar with
Sure.
that character first, because he was first before Red Hulk. But
He was
yeah,
very,
basically the
very
same
similar
thing. It's the
characters.
same
Yeah.
idea.
Yep. Number nine is Bolt. So he's a mercenary, he's an assassin, he shoots lightning and he can teleport. Now if another option, if I can't use Bolt, then you could use his son Dreadbolt, who actually battled Tim and the Teen Titans in the 2000s. That could work. But I especially want to use Bolt because he's from a little comic called Blue Devil.
Never heard of it. What's
I know
what
you
is that?
haven't.
Blue what?
Yep, exactly. And the last one, number
Think it's
10.
Blue Beetle. I think you meant Blue
Oh,
Beetle. Is that what
God.
you meant? What
But
blue
I mean, if you're talking
what?
about Paris Cullens, it's both. But anyway, number 10, Rose Wilson, Ravager. So here we
Yes.
go. His former teammate in Teen Titans. She's like Deathstroke, but she's sexy and she's fun with a side of crazy. And she'd be sort of like Tim. She'd be like Tim's Catwoman, right? A frequent nemesis, and she's taking out mercenary contracts in Gotham or whatever. And he's always trying to stop her and trying to turn her back to the good side. And she's always trying to flirt with him and seduce him. It'll be a big will they, won't we, they kind of thing. So I think that's my rogues gallery for a Tim Drake comic.
I'm pretty sure that in the later one of the later incarnations of the Teen Titans, she actually did make a play for him a few times.
That
In the one that
sounds
Jeff
familiar.
Johns, I think the one in the Jeff Johns series, I'm pretty sure she did a few times too. So that yes, that's a great rogues gallery. I really like it.
Yes, it is.
I'm not going to compare and contrast the two of them. I'm not going to say whose was better,
That's
but
okay. I will.
it's good.
Mine was.
It's good. All right, very good. All right. Here comes our mystery fantastic question. Are you ready?
I am dreading this. If it's about
Okay.
Philadelphia Eagles, I'm going to be
It's
really unhappy.
not about the Philadelphia Eagles because you're not worthy of that. All right. This is going to be fun. This is basically rapid fire questions. I just want your first instinct on the answer. Okay. These are
Ooh,
basically
okay.
favorites. Okay. Are you ready? And then at the end, I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
Okay.
All right. Favorite doctor.
Doctor Who? Are
Yeah.
you asking like
Yes,
which
favorite Doctor
doctor?
Who. Yes,
Oh, okay.
favorite Doctor Who.
Paul McGann.
Okay. Favorite character with Doctor in their name.
Well, other than Doctor Who.
Yeah, it can't be Doctor Who.
Right, obviously. Doctor Midnight.
Doctor Midnight. Okay, very good. Favorite hero of the
Oh, actually,
rebel.
it should be Doctor Fate. I'm sorry, but that's okay. I
Okay.
said
All right,
Doctor Midnight first. Let's
that's
go with
fine.
that.
Okay. Favorite hero of the rebellion.
Han Solo.
Favorite villain in the Empire?
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Favorite JSA member?
Oh gosh, that's tough. Jay Garrick.
My favorite JLI member?
Guy Gardner, believe it or not.
Okay. Favorite non-alcoholic beverage?
Birch beer.
Okay. Favorite Florida beach?
Cape Sandblas.
Okay. Favorite art page from Who's Who?
Oh, you know, Rob and I have been talking about doing that in like maybe the last episode of Who's Who someday, and I'm dreading it. You know, I don't have a favorite, but I'll just pick an amazing one. David Mazzucchelli's Commissioner Gordon.
All right. Favorite pet name for Rob Kelly?
My daughter calls him Robadoodle, so I'll go with that.
All right. And favorite lounge?
I've been to a bunch. You know, Trader Joe's is pretty amazing, or Trader Vic's, I'm sorry. Trader Vic's is pretty amazing. One of the lesser ones I went to is called the Fantasta Lounge. I'll just pick that one, I guess.
All right. Well, you got two of these right. So I did have Birch Beer, and I did have, of course, the Fantasta Lounge. The other answers were guy with the scarf,
Okay.
favorite doctor with her name was Doom. Favorite hero of the
Oh.
rebellion is Luke Skywalker. Favorite villain is Darth Vader. Come on, these are easy. Favorite JSA member is Our Man, of course. Favorite JLI member is Mr. Miracle. Like I said, favorite non-alcoholic beverage is Birch Beer.
I can't believe we landed on that. That's amazing.
Favorite Florida beach is actually in California. Those are much better.
No,
Favorite
they're
art
not.
favorite art page from Who's Who is Phantom Lady, of course. Favorite pet name for Rob Kelly is, of course, Snookums. And the favorite lounge is, yes, the Fantastic Lounge. So there you go. You got two of them right. Well
Phantom
done.
Lady's pretty amazing. That is
Yeah.
true.
Yes, it
Yeah,
was.
there's no denying that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Have you been to the Gulf side
No,
beaches? I mean, the
no,
Gulf's
there are gorgeous beaches, of
the best
course.
beaches in the country, hands down.
Probably the most favorite place I ever went in Florida, the beach wasn't that great, but we went down to Key West. We
Okay.
stayed at a hotel. It was called like the southernmost point, at the
Yeah,
southernmost
sure.
point, obviously. And that was wonderful. Now we were there. I went down there with my wife, and my God, we went down there in like June or something like that.
Okay.
And it was one of those deals where you get ready, you take a shower, and you go to walk to the restaurants, and as soon as you stepped outside, you were just drenched in sweat before you got to the corner, of course. So it didn't matter. The pool wasn't even refreshing at that point. It was like bath water and everything, but it was a really nice time. I loved the food was great. We had a lot of fun, so it was a good time.
That's just May to September is basically what it is for us down here.
Yeah, my God, I don't know how you do that. That's why you're all nuts.
It's wonderful. It's,
I'm not a humidity guy. It's the humidity.
okay.
That's the thing. I just can't stand the humidity. It's not even
You
the
like your
heat.
humidity to be 3 feet high in your front yard and you have to shovel
Exactly.
it to even get your car out,
Exactly. Right
which is
now,
insane.
we've had our share of snow this winter. Right now it's fine, actually. We have basically nothing at this point, but I think we were supposed to get some in a couple of days. So we had our big snowstorm a couple of weeks ago, where the kids were counting weekends. The kids were home from school for like 10 days straight, and I wanted to walk
Oh
into
my gosh.
traffic. It
Dude.
drove me nuts, but we're kind of past that now, and now we'll just have kind of the temperatures will fluctuate between like the 30s and the 50s for probably the next month, and then spring will be here, and we have the cherry blossoms. So feel free to come up for the cherry blossoms.
I'll get
So
right
it's a
on
nice
that.
time. Yep. Well, it's closing time, Shaq. So listen, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. Where can listeners find you? Or do you do any podcasting? Do you do anything like that? Where can people find you?
I've done a couple. I've
Okay.
dabbled.
All right.
Right now, you could
Gotcha.
find me over on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You might have
Okay.
heard of it.
I have heard of it, yes.
The website's a little janky, but we're looking on finding some new IT people. But
Yeah.
anyway,
Okay.
So you can find me on shows such as JSA in the 90s, which is part of the Justice Society Presents feed, where we're talking about all kinds of JSA characters and comics that from the 1990s. We'll soon be graduating in the 2000s. We'll get into that beloved Geoff Johns series we're so excited about. I also do the Marvel Star Wars from Empire to Jedi podcast, where we're diving into the 1980s Marvel Star Wars comics, specifically the era between Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Been having a blast on that podcast. All the episodes are great except for one of them. You should probably skip that one.
The most recent one was sheer brilliance. It was sort of the Citizen Kane of Star Wars podcasts, I would call it, probably.
You're absolutely right. Henny Bernstein's episode was phenomenal. He was great. You're right. Then, at least by the time this comes out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, damn it.
Then I have a podcast called Once Upon a Geek, where I talk about whatever I want to talk about. It might be talking about What If comics. I might be talking about Doctor Who. I might be talking about Blue Devil. I might be talking any number of things.
Okay. Some of those you can skip. I'll let you decide which ones you can skip.
Okay, thank you. And then I'm part of the Who's Who, the Definitive Directory of the DC Universe podcast, where Rob Kelly and I, we go through every issue of Who's Who and every character of Who's Who, and we finish the whole series. We're doing it again in a different way this time. We're still having a blast with it. It's kind of the show that founded the network, really. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It's my origin story with the network. Yeah. Yep.
And we can't be blamed for that. No, but it's too late now. There's a show called FW Team Up, which is hosted by Cisco, and I'm on it every quarter on the segments dealing with a Marvel team up with Spider-Man. So we have a great time doing that. And I'm around the network doing a lot of other stuff because a lot of the people in the network are kind enough to invite me on their show before their 17th episode.
Right.
And then and you can find me on social media as Once Upon a Geek.
All right. Well,
I want to say to you, all kidding aside, thank you so much for having me on the show. This is an absolute blast. Your show is such a joy. You know, when I first heard it was going to be booze and comics, I'm like, okay, but you've made it such fun. The whole Tiki Lounge motif, the way you approach the secret origins, your natural. I hope no one's listening. Incredible sense of humor, your natural comedic timing is fantastic, and the show is an absolute joy. So I'm thrilled to be part of it. Thank you.
Well, I'm very appreciative of you and Rob and all the other guys bringing me in, because this has been a blast. This is my second year doing this, and I'm really looking forward. I've had some amazing people on the show. It's been a lot of the present company. You know, what are we going to do? But it's been an absolute blast. This has become a labor of love, and I thank you and Rob and everybody else for your support on this. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. So definitely listen to all those 25 shows that Shag has, because they're all even the Blue Devil episodes are very good. I even listened to the Blue Devil episodes. I have no idea who half these characters are, because I never read the series, but it seems nice. I like Paris Cullen's art, so there you go.
You're allowed to skip episodes, just so you know. The collector mentality is the worst, because we have the collector mentality as comic collectors. Yep. Then as podcast, I can't skip that episode. Yes, you can. It's okay. You can declare podcast bankruptcy and just catch up. You're allowed to do that, people.
Yeah, I know. You are right about the completest aspect of it, though, because my God, there are series that I'm still hanging on to the most current Avengers comic book, and it's terrible.
Oh my gosh, really?
It's beginning, and I'm like, why do I keep reading this? I don't understand why I keep reading it. I keep picking it up like the actual physical copies. There's still about like a half a dozen comics I still buy the physical copies of. You know, the rest I read online, and that's one of them. And I have no idea why. It's just because I've always gotten the Avengers. I can't stop. It's a sickness. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm reading this.
I finally, when I stopped collecting Justice League during the New 52 after 35 years, whatever it was, that was when I finally realized it's okay to stop.
Yes. Yeah, you're probably right. All right, well, we digress. So, Shag, thanks again for being on the show, and we will be right back.
It's the year 1992, and the Justice Society of America, the world's first superhero team, make a triumphant return after 6 years trapped in another dimension. Finally home, the JSA find themselves relics in a world that has moved on. It's the age of pulse-pounding action, where the rules of fair play are tossed aside for gritty violence. Our heroes ask themselves, Does the world still need a Justice Society? Oh, yes, it does. Join me, the Irredeemable Shag, for JSA in the 90s. We'll delve into the 10-issue Justice Society of America ongoing series, drawn by the iconic Mike Parabek. We'll explore the 8-issue retroactive miniseries and unearth hidden gems from the era. Join us for JSA in the 90s, available as part of the Justice Society Presents podcast feed.
And we're back. If you like what you heard, support the Fire & Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name-checked on the show of your choice. Thanks to Sensational Sean Ross and Jolly J. Campbell for choosing the Fantastic Four. If you choose the Fantastic Four, I will have a game of catch with you in your own backyard, providing the baseball is not a nuclear device, or at least find some fun way to mention your name on every episode. Now, here's the feedback from episode 16 with DC Dave featuring Superman and a lemon drop martini. Rollicking Rob Kelly says, before I comment on the other stuff and forget, big cosign on Dave's no billionaires rule, except maybe Paul McCartney. He seems pretty chill. I would also accept Paul McCartney. Absolutely, Rob. Do you make life hard on yourself? Yes. That's referring to the ad that we covered. While I can enjoy the no-frills plot mechanics of a 60s DC comic, my sweet spot is, unsurprisingly, the 70s, when more characterization was mixed in insane goings-on than the DCU. But I nonetheless appreciated Dave picking something from this era. Supposedly, we are finally getting Brainiac on the big screen for Superman 2. It's only been 60 years. Also, love another episode of The Poor. I'm cool now, right? You're not, Rob, but thanks anyway. Extravagant Edo Boznar says, add me to the No Billionaires contingent as well. Otherwise, great show featuring another conversation that did not, in fact, require an alcoholic beverage to make it go down easier. Even though, like Rob, the 70s and the 80s is where I feel more at home with comics, I read more than my share of Silver Age Superman tales thanks to the DC Digest and generally always found them entertaining, if nothing else. On the question of why people were depicting smoking in the comics back then, the answer is pretty simple. Smoking was far more common back then, and its ill effects on health were still not publicly discussed in any significant degree. Growing up in the 70s, I recall how many people still smoked back then, and you would sometimes even see guests on talk shows smoking on camera. And yes, DC's Bob Hope series was still chugging along in 1966 and was only canceled in early 1968. Meanwhile, the Jerry Lewis series continued until sometime in 1971. Dangerous Dr. Ange says, wonderful coverage of a story new to me. I am always amazed at how many of us, at least in this little comic community, tout Superman from the 30s to the 70s as a big part of their fandom. I got mine from Santa as a kid and still have it. It is where my love for the San Superman concept began. I had to laugh along with you on the artistic flourishes of the characters in the book. The painted faces on the bombs, the Brainiac Luthor effigies, brilliant. I listened in the car, so I can't remember all the fantastic questions, but I will give one answer to the kryptonite question. I am a fast walker and can't stand when people mosey in front of me right in the middle of hallways so I can't pass. Also, I think slow walkers travel in packs and walk abreast to make things worse. Frustrating. So I would create magenta kryptonite, which would cause searing pain in slow walkers unless they sped up the pace. And I would make a ring out of it so it's an aura which would surround me, allowing me to walk around or with them at their incurred speed. I swear, if they had to cut off my hand after years of fast walking, I might say it was worth it. Keep in mind, Ange works in a hospital, so I feel like there's going to be a lot of elder abuse going on here, Ange, but I know what you're saying. Gregarious Gothos Mansion says, really enjoyed the show and the Superman discussion. I'm jealous of all you guys that got to read Superman from the 30s to the 70s and Batman from the 30s to 70s growing up. I saw ads for them in comics and wanted both volumes, but could never find either. Back then, it didn't even occur to me to order them through the mail. I discovered Silver Age Superman through various places, the Tempo paperbacks and digest mostly. It is a fun time to visit. The stories are so crammed with ideas and so much fun. Be forewarned, though, they are addictive. I bought a copy of Lois Lane 58 because of one panel I saw online, the bigamy panel. That can't be real, I told myself. The Comics Code would never approve that. It had to be doctored. So I ordered the issue on eBay. Turns out the panel was real, and now I have over 100 issues of Lois Lane. When I got going, I couldn't stop. While I'm a Superman fan, I consider myself a Batman guy first and foremost. Back to the Lois Lane stuff. This is Brett. Lois Lane is one of those low-key comic series that is incredibly fun to read and collect, based almost solely on the covers. Some of the covers are so ridiculous and crazy and sometimes offensive that you almost can't help yourself. So I have a few issues of Lois Lane myself based purely on the covers. I would like to offer a theory on how back to Gothos Mansion. I would like to offer a theory on how you guys ended up with the issue. Back in the day, Superman family back issues weren't very expensive. He was the best-selling character back then, so there were a lot of copies of his comics and other characters. I'm sure you probably like the idea of getting such an old comic at a good price. I have Action and Superman issues from the 60s, too. I didn't give a large price for any of them other than Parasite's first appearance. Yeah, you're probably right, Gothos Mansion. That's probably, I just kind of acquired them probably. Nifty Nate the Great says, Silver Age Superman sure had his moments, even though it looks like Luthor and Brainiac were definitely the villainous version of Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble in this story. Buds to the end. I'm not sure if Superman broke the bro code. I think he did. But I have a feeling that Hal Jordan would have left Lex and Brainiac on Lexor and told them not to come back. I also had Superman and Batman books you mentioned, as well as one on Shazam from the 40s to the 70s. All three were awesome. Also, can easily picture Mr. Mind selling Lex and Brainiac that spaceship. Absolutely. Bouncy Bucky 749 says, here's the fantastic question. If Jack Kirby came into the Fantastic Lounge and ordered something, what do you think he would get? And if he said he would pay by making you a custom drawing for you of any character he'd worked on or created, who would you choose and where would you hang it? First of all, Bucky, this is a great question. The king would probably order a beer, I'm guessing, and it would absolutely be on the house. His money is no good for me. If he still wanted to do a custom drawing, it would be the Thing. I think I would like him to do a drawing of the Thing, and I would hang it right above the main bar next to the top shelf booze. Yeah, that would be the dream. If the king was still with us, if he walked into the Fantastic Lounge, nothing would be better. Sensational Super Captain says, really enjoyed this episode, which is not too surprising considering that my two favorite characters are also Superman and Captain America, hence my posting name. You know, I didn't realize Super Captain, that's where the name came from, but it makes complete sense. But that's good to know. I thought maybe you were trying to one-up Captain Entropy by putting Super in front of your captain name. I don't know. So anyway, good to know. I love Silver Age stories, especially those featuring Brainiac, Bizarro, and Mr. Mixel. What's it? Mixel? I always said Mixelplick growing up. I guess it's Mixipidlick or something like that. I don't know. I'm going with Mixelplick. Silver Age Luthor never clicked with me. He became a favorite villain when Byrne made him into a super smart, super rich, super influential enemy instead of an evil inventor type. I don't know about Black Kryptonite, but a recent issue of Supergirl did feature some pink kryptonite, which had the effect of making Supergirl fall in love with a guy she had just met. Online discussion of that story also alerted me to a Peter David Supergirl story that I have not read from the early 2000s that contained some pink kryptonite that apparently changed a character's sexual orientation. Also glad to hear that DC Dave also has good taste in music. I am an Erasure fan, and Vince Clark is a musical genius. Thanks, Super Captain. Maybe you guys can hit a concert together. Revolutionary Rich says, looking at the gallery images, the Lexaphone's exact shape is a little hard to be sure of because we don't quite see it clearly from the directly above or below. If the top slash bottom facets are hexagons, the figure as a whole would have 20 sides, making it an irregular icosahedron, maybe? As opposed to a regular one, which gamers would be familiar with as a dice 20, I guess a D20. Alternately, if the top slash bottom facets are octagons and the object has 26 sides, which would make it an irregular, oh my God, are you kidding me, Rich? Icosahexahedron, although the chi connector is semi-optional. Not everyone uses the format for complex polygon slash polyhedron names. So if you could, so you could just call it an, oh my God, icosahexahedron, which rolls off the tongue a little better in English. There's actually a wiki page on the subject of naming conventions for 2D polygons and 3D polyhedra. This may be my favorite email ever. And also the octahedron you mentioned is another familiar shape for gamers better known as a D8. So there you go. I hope that clears it up for everyone as I completely butchered these names and have no idea what Rich is talking about, but I love that email. Thanks, Rich. Welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. Get this man a drink. Monumental Martin Gray says, nice one on getting DC Dave on board, Brett, and how lovely to hear discussion on Silver Age Superman comic. That's just my bag, and this is one I've not read previously. Such fun. I love Lexor stories. I wish DC would put them all in the trade. That'd be a good idea, actually, Martin. I don't recall Superman telling Ardora Lex was a baddie on Earth. I need to find that one. I do remember the wacky story in which Perry White became a senator and went off to Washington, D.C., in a morning suit. There, Van Benson was a silver fox rather than a wishy-washy brown-haired fella as here. So far as new varieties of kryptonite go, I would invent a very unique glowing rock which would mildly slap anyone using the phrase very unique. It would be green to ensure it was very unique. Still, on K-Metal, I would like to try Dave's black coffee version because it's not only Kryptonians who get no buzz from coffee. To me, it's just a nice drink. If we could make a change to the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths, it would be to keep the Infinite Earths. We don't need the JSAers on Earth 1 to provide legacy heroes. They already had them on Earths 1 and 2. Having the JSA debut before Superman diluted his significance. It wasn't one of the big ideas of Superman relaunch that he had to be or very unique. Well, he was when he was the first hero to debut big time on Earth's Zone post-Crisis. Not so much. The big hero of the new heroic era doesn't cut it. Brett, I agree about the horrible use of Superman in Dark Knight Returns. That was just one of the reasons I didn't like that book. Talk about overrated. I have to agree with you, Martin, and thank you for your very unique comments. Batlin Brian Schufo says, great discussion on how post-Crisis could have been managed better. Based on the Nightwing slash Robin dilemma and similar issues, probably no solution would please a majority of readers. For my version of Lexor would be named Brainiac's World. Some requirements. No body of water would be more than 5 feet deep. I'm a terrible swimmer in short. None of it would be salt water. What kind of planet would have such undrinkable water? It would be shaped like a 12-sided die from a role-playing game. Go talk to Rich about that, Brian. Gravity would be 50% of Earth, so if I fall off a tall building, I can do the Batman-style parachute trick he does with his cape and still survive the fall. Most everything is edible, not just the plants, but also the dirt and rocks, and most animals can regenerate body parts, so if I ate a chicken wing or a turkey leg, it would grow back. Also, no billionaires. Thank you, Brian. Jumpin' John Stibe says, once again, I enjoy listening to a new episode of the Fantastic Four while shoveling snow in my driveway. Curse you, Wisconsin weather. I enjoy the banter as much as I enjoy the recap of the issue. I used to proudly proclaim that I could name all the different types of kryptonite and all their effects on various people and things. Thank you, who's who. But sadly, I can no longer do that from memory. Maybe it was some of that darn amnesium. I had something else I wanted to say, but now I just can't remember. Thank you, John. And go Badgers. Bombastic Big Frank says, as always, I learned a lot about Superman. Never knew all the personalities of Superman. Never would have guessed that Superman could be messed with / bullied by bad guys. Who would have thought that the Man of Steel would have performance anxiety? Always thought Lex Luthor was just a human like us, but he was also the man on another planet? Mind-blowing. And then he gets outed by Superman. I hope you get over Superman being portrayed as a prick in The Dark Knight. Might want to see somebody about that pent-up anger. I will never get over that, Big Frank. Keep up the good work. I always learn something new every episode. Looking forward to March. Thanks, buddy. Sensual Sean Ross says, great episode as always. I am... Sorry, I'm laughing at my own names. As I grow older, I have come to love those silly Silver Age stories. It was fun to hear you discuss the issue, especially since Supes gives Luthor a bit of a break. I agree that the John Byrne reinvention of Luthor is the best version. I highly recommend the backup story in Superman Volume 2, Issue 2, where Lex torments a poor waitress in a truly diabolical way. Also, black coffee kryptonite is a brilliant idea. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, Luthor was such a prick in that issue. Precocious Paul Kien says, sorry I'm late, but a great episode as always. Great to hear DC Dave. Perry White was briefly a senator. He was appointed to finish out a term by the governor, as I recall. Not sure why they bothered that, to be honest. Silver Age Superman is one that I can take only in small doses, but always a hoot. And I actually may try the lemon drop. Sounds interesting. You absolutely should, Paul. You'd love it. Thanks to all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to The Fantastic Poor, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And, of course, please feel free to leave a 5-star review. That really helps. The Fantastic Poor is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of The Fantastic Poor and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show, and I'll read all feedback at the end of every episode. Follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcast. Use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcast. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Shag for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge and keeping his shoes on. Until next time, the bar is open.
You know, Hooters was founded in Florida, right?
I figured it was. Yeah. I actually didn't know that, but I assumed it would be.
Makes perfect sense.